This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're tuned in to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Today I'm speaking to Michael Kim, who is the Asia-Pacific Partnership Manager for Google for Startups. Formerly known as Google for Entrepreneurs, they offer a suite of resources and network support to help startups with different aspects. This is an area that could be particularly useful considering roughly 550,000 entrepreneurs set up to do business in the US each month, but between 60 to 70% of these new businesses will fail. And in Malaysia, the estimated failure rate for a startup is about 80%. Now, Google for Startups says they want to focus on three major areas: partnerships, programs, and tools. It sounds like parenting. You want to introduce the startups to more established friends, enroll them in programs, and provide them with tools. So when it comes to picking these startups, what are some of the key traits that you use to evaluate them?
Yeah. So just at a high level, so Google for Startups partners with community leaders or startup hubs that already work with numerous startups in their region. So a good example is we partner with great co-working spaces all throughout Asia. A good example is I was just in Bangkok last week, and we partnered with Hubhub, one of the largest co-working spaces, and they have thousands of members. So Google for Startups, the way we work with startups is we actually work with the local hubs, and they tell us, hey, I think in Bangkok, we need more programs on AI or machine learning. In Seoul, we work out of campus. In Singapore, we've got a great group called Found8. And so we work with those community leaders to identify what their community, their startup communities need. And then we deploy those programs and tools. So we don't particularly evaluate every startup in each region. We're working with the kind of the hubs who are then connected to the startups, and we work with each of those community leaders.
Okay, so it's more of a, it seems very offhand, except for the fact that you're providing the facilities. Is there a larger business strategy? Do these startups then feed into your Google X projects later on?
So there's one real big reason why we did this. It's because our founders love entrepreneurs. Sergey and Larry, they were entrepreneurs themselves. And so this particular team is really special. It was created by a woman named Mary Grove. And she had worked very closely with the founders. And she knew that not only did the founders, but numerous employees within Google have been a part of a startup. And so it's actually a passion for many people. It's part of our DNA to work with entrepreneurs. So there's no business model or monetization. This group is solely dedicated to just supporting entrepreneurs around the world. And they don't necessarily have to use a Google product. We have many startups that work out of campus or in our partner hubs that use other tools that are not Google products. But that's not really important for us to determine whether or not we deploy programs. This is a group that was dedicated by the founders themselves to be able to distribute the best of what we do. And so that's why I love this team. And there is no future product goal or to feed into Google X. It's really just something that the company wants to do.
So there's no need for companies to give up, say, equity stake or anything like that?
No. All of our programs are free out of campus. We take no equity stake in startups. And like I said, we are working through startups through our local partner hubs, so that we could scale and distribute and touch as many startups as possible. And so I think that's why entrepreneurs really enjoy working with Google for Startups, is that they know that we have no other motive other than to give them the best. So if they need a particular product tool or connection within Google, our job is to play navigator and navigate them and connect them to the right people and tools within the company so that their company can grow.
So there is no monetary incentive here. So is this a PR exercise for Google? Is that the larger brand value here?
No, it's definitely the KPI. The way we measure our team actually isn't through press. The KPIs are the things that we measure ourselves on are actually impact. Mm-hmm. And so the things that our group is measured upon is actually things like jobs created, funding raised. It's really important for our group to be able to show that we're making a difference in the communities around the world. So this isn't about press. Obviously, we have so many great products and tools on many different teams that get a lot of press. This group is really about how do we highlight the stories of founders. So It's less about touting Google, but it's more about how do we show off and amplify the great work of entrepreneurs around the world.
So now there's a lot of talk about what's the next big thing, right? We are seeing the first generation of post-global financial crisis unicorns getting listed, and now we're looking forward. What is Google seeing here? Where is the promise and growth and progress coming from here in the startup scene?
That's a great question. I love that question. It's also hard to answer just because there are so many verticals. I oversee APAC, and so I can only speak for that, but I know my America and MIA colleagues also have very exciting verticals that may be a little bit different. But what I mean is each region in Asia is a little bit different. A good example is, let's say, Japan. When you look at that startup ecosystem, you have an aging population, but you also have a very technologically advanced community. And so what you're seeing there is a huge dedication to machine learning and robotics. They know they have a shrinking workforce, so you're also seeing this huge innovation rise in terms of robotics. If you go down to Southeast Asia, you see that most people actually have two mobile phones. And so there are very mobile-first communities. And so when it comes to fintech or e-commerce, it's booming there. And so as I travel through the 12 countries that I'm overseeing in APAC, each region has a different particular vertical that's booming. And I think that's what makes this one of the most exciting geographic regions for startups in the world.
What do you think the next generation of companies is going to look like in terms of services? So now we've seen digital services take the lead from transport to music to lodging. What particular services are going to be leading the next big thing?
Well, in terms of services, what will most companies need in order to be successful? And I think it's going to be how they manage data. There's so much data now in the world. And so I think the most successful companies moving forward will be how do companies utilize great data to make things more efficient for people and to be able to create better outcomes. And that's why AI and machine learning is something that's so important for not just one particular country in Asia, but all of them, or all actually around the world, is we now are fortunate to be living in a time where we have a great amount of data. And then how do we distill that so that it's actually useful? And companies that can utilize or take advantage of that particular skill set or dive deep on that will be the most successful moving forward.
Okay. And does this tie in back to, this seems like something that Google will be interested in, right, in total, because, you know, search engines and data and cloud, it's all about that data now.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, every company, I think, if you're in the technology field, every company relies on great data. And moving forward, I think startups or whatever size company you are, whether you're a startup or a tech giant, will have to leverage data to build great products for their customer base. And in the end, if that can make life better for the people that they're serving, I think those companies will be highly successful.
Okay, and we're going to dive deeper into the startup ecosystem in Asia Pacific in just a little bit. I've been speaking to Michael Kim, the Asia Pacific Partnership Manager with Google for Startups. This is The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You're tuned in to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. I've been speaking to Michael Kim, who is the Asia Pacific Partnership Manager with Google for Startups. And in the first part of this interview, we were talking about the purpose that Google for Startups plays. Now, Michael, when it comes to startups, everyone wants to be the next unicorn. Do you think there is too much cheap capital going around?
I'm not an investor, so I can't talk about whether or not there's cheap capital. Mm-hmm. What I can say, though, is that there is the excitement around Asian entrepreneurs is valid. I mean, you're seeing a generation of young entrepreneurs who, for this time, many have studied abroad, many have lived in different regions. They're bringing this global knowledge back to their home countries. And that's a very unique opportunity. No other time, I think, has there ever been this much cross-pollination of global thinking and knowledge. So when you see entrepreneurs, especially, let's say, in Southeast Asia, who, you know, have studied abroad and come back, they're bringing not only new ideas, but their talent, their global network to help build their communities, to help build their countries to the next chapter. And I find that very, very exciting. And so, you know, if investors are excited about that and investing in that, I think that's fantastic. And I actually only see that continuing to grow.
Yes. So this cross-pollination idea, now you used to live in San Francisco and now you're spending a lot of time in Asia. What are you seeing as are the key differences between building startups in the US and in Asia? What strategies need to change or differ?
Yeah, well, so yeah, I grew up in the Bay Area and I was very fortunate to work with some amazing companies in the Valley for over a decade. And it was really, really exciting. But what brought me out to Asia was a different type of excitement. When you look at Silicon Valley or America as a whole, it's a very developed country. But when you come out to Asia, there are cities that are very, very developed, and there are some cities that are still on that development path. And so when it comes to what's right or wrong, I don't think there's anything right or wrong. I think there's just different sets of opportunities. And when you look at Southeast Asia, for instance, you're seeing people, what I find really inspiring is young entrepreneurs are literally building a city. They're literally building new communities. They're building the next chapter for their country. And I find that very different from the goals, let's say, in Silicon Valley. The city there, the San Francisco, the New York, the big markets there are very developed. Whereas you may see in Southeast Asia, they're still building immensely useful tools, but those products are very different because the needs of those people are different. And so I think that they're just on different levels of their development path, but the type of entrepreneur needed is still the same, which is highly ambitious, able to fight through the challenges of building a company, getting funding, and still being able to go global.
From what I have gathered about Google for Startups, the campus plays a big role. In Asia, I think we've only got one in Korea. Are there any plans to build more campuses in the region soon? Say, like in Singapore, which is kind of like the startup capital of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, so you're right. Campuses are an amazing facility and a tool that a lot of entrepreneurs love coming to. We actually have one right now. It's only in Campus Seoul. We have campus right now where I'm actually residing in. But we recently made an announcement that we're opening our second APAC campus, and that's going to be in Tokyo. And so we're really, really excited about that. The Japan ecosystem has long been a center of innovation. They've been some of the largest tech giants have come out of there. And so we're really excited to be launching Campus Tokyo at the end of this year, which brings to another huge major ecosystem online.
Okay, so no plans closer to Kuala Lumpur anytime soon?
We don't have a campus set for Southeast Asia at the moment. But as we continue to look at where Google can make an impact, we're constantly looking at where we can deploy Google for Startups tools and programs to support entrepreneurs.
Right, because your reach is not limited to the campus itself. It's also the partners.
Totally, yeah. We have the reason. So Google for Startups works in two ways. One is we build these physical campuses around the world. We have six and we're going to have seven. With Campus Tokyo. And these facilities or these startup hubs or community centers allow us to go very, very deep in that particular region. So here at Campus Seoul, we're hosting programs 1 to 2 a day. And so entrepreneurs are coming in, people from different startups are coming in, and they're getting educated, they're getting mentorship on a wide array of verticals. But because we don't have a campus, in every single city. That's why the partnerships team comes in and we have local hubs that I mentioned earlier, like Hubba in Bangkok or Foundate in Singapore, 91 Springboard in India. And they kind of act like a campus. They're a physical hub for us there for us to deploy the tools and programs that we manage.
So co-working spaces seem to be integral to your strategy. Do you have a presence in Malaysia?
We don't, but it is a market that we're looking highly at, and we're very excited to hopefully get there by the end of next year or early next year.
Fantastic. We look forward to that. Speaking about Southeast Asia, what startups are really picking up, whether it's attention or funding? What is the next big thing in these areas?
Oh, man. Well, I think for each city or for each region, it's different. I was actually just in Bangkok last week for Asia Demo Day, which is a big event that we do every single year. And the Thai startup was a company called Glazik. It's a really inspiring young female entrepreneur who is trying to revolutionize the way people purchase and get eyeglasses. And so in Southeast Asia or in Thailand, something as simple as getting glasses is actually very difficult to get good prescription glasses. And so she, who had studied abroad, is using her global knowledge and her network to build a much more efficient way for all people in Bangkok and just Thailand as a whole to be able to get better prescription glasses. And I think that those are the kind of products that I find very, very unique, but also very impactful, because It may not be a company as large as Uber, but it's also attacking a very relevant problem, which is in that city or in that country, many people find difficulty being able to find a doctor, get the right prescription, and get good quality glasses. And she's reducing the friction to do that. So that's a good example there. Another good example is a company called Wayu from Indonesia. You go to Indonesia, you ride in a taxi or a Grab there, and you can easily see that there are food stalls all around the country. I think there are 300,000 food stalls all around the country. And these are mom and pop shops, but he saw an opportunity to digitize them. So how can we make ordering and purchasing easier for these mom and pop shops who are selling food on the carts? How do we provide them with financial tools so that they can easily identify how much revenue they're bringing in? And then also in terms of marketing, you know, most of these particular stalls don't market, but now there's an opportunity for them to market online. And so you see each region doing something different and each entrepreneur in each region attacking a different problem that's relevant to their country. And that's what I find so unique being in this role.
And, you know, sometimes there's this perception from the West that Asian startups are either mimicking or copying established startups or established companies from that side. From what you've seen, do you think that this claim has any merit to it?
I have heard that quite a bit, obviously, but I also think that there's a huge level of innovation and new ideas coming out of here. And I would say there are many times where I also see many American entrepreneurs not copying, but looking and being inspired by what's happening in Asia and doing something very, very same. So I think the notion that Asian entrepreneurs are simply copying whatever's coming from the West is wrong. I know that there's genuine innovation and creativity coming out of Asia. That's one of the reasons why I'm here. And also, when it comes to the problems that young entrepreneurs in Asia are developing, it's different because the countries are different. And so they have to be innovative. You know, when it comes to, like I said, my example of Wayu, it's a very innovative company because culturally in Indonesia, they have these food stalls. In San Francisco, when I walk down Market Street, they don't have that. So they are being innovative. They are building new tools that are unique to Asia. And I actually think moving forward, the West is going to feel very inspired by the technology and innovation coming out of many of the countries in Asia, and it will be mimicked in America.
Yeah, that's always a fine line, right, between inspiration and copying. And it's always up for debate. Today, I'm speaking to Michael Kim, who is the Asia Pacific Partnership Manager for Google for Startups. In Malaysia, you know, we have like 3,000 startups, which is relatively low compared to the 1 million registered enterprises we have here. In comparison, Singapore has 42,000 startups. Mm. This translates to like Malaysia has like of the companies registered, 0.25% of our companies are startups versus 9% in Singapore. What do you think Malaysia is missing here?
I don't think Malaysia is missing anything. I also think that when it comes to the number of registered startups in Singapore, that doesn't necessarily mean I think that the startups are actually in Singapore. I think many people may register in Singapore, but their startups are actually based in different countries like Malaysia or Thailand or Vietnam. And so it may have the largest number of registrations, but I don't think that they actually have the largest number of like startups physically there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing missing out of Malaysia, and there's nothing missing out of any of these countries. I think what the only difference is culturally was there at an early onset, the idea that young people can build a tech company. And, you know, a good example is in Korea. Even though we're a very mature market, even here, young entrepreneurs or young people in general, when they are growing up, were not necessarily prone to or encouraged to start a company, just culturally different. They were more inclined or pushed to work at a particular large corporation. But now you're seeing that culturally change. A lot of this young net generation has studied abroad. They've worked in Silicon Valley or New York. They have that desire to not go work at a large corporation. They want to build something of their own. And that's just a difference in cultural mindset. And I actually think that as that cultural mindset continues to grow, where young people feel like that's a viable path to build a career and to build a life, we're going to see that happen everywhere. And so I've been to Malaysia. I really love visiting Kuala Lumpur. I really love visiting and talking to the entrepreneurs there. And there's nothing missing there. There's the talent. There's the infrastructure. There's the ideas. And there's a willingness to build great companies. And so I actually think that moving forward, we'll see Malaysia be a huge hub for innovation.
So you think that it's just a matter of time that this cross-pollination of ideas and cultures will eventually lead to more people wanting to start up?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
And when you were in KL, or from your own observations, anything standing out to you in terms of our own startup scene?
I would say that people had a huge desire to go global, which I thought was pretty cool. So sometimes a good example is if I go to Japan, the idea of wanting to go global, I think most people still want to build a great company, but with for Japan. Whereas when I went to Malaysia, I remember sitting there at an event, and every single one of the companies or the founders there had a desire to go global. They were building a product that they wanted the world to use, which I thought was really, really cool. So from the onset, they were not just tackling a problem or a challenge in Malaysia, but they wanted to go build something bigger. And I think that's a very unique mindset, something that even actually in Korea that we try to encourage is, you know, Korea is a very small country in a sense with only 50 million people. So a lot of times people build products for those 50 million people, but we try to encourage people to build products for the world. And so I think in terms of Malaysia, you have that mindset already if the entrepreneurs do. And so that's very, very exciting.
I find that fascinating that the mindset isn't a universal mindset. And that you're saying that in Korea, where it's so much more advanced, the infrastructure-wise from Malaysia, that mindset isn't as prevalent. Is this going global mindset a issue that you have to deal with?
I wouldn't say it's an issue. I actually think sometimes a company doesn't need to go global. I think there's always a notion that, oh, every company needs to go global and it has to be a Google or it has to be Uber. Some problems are big enough within that country that they're tackling one challenge. And that is a very, very good company. Not every company needs to go global. But to my earlier point, I do think it's a difference in terms of just perspective. When you build a product for a particular region, the UI may be different, the design, the way they launch it, the languages. So a company that's very, very good in a particular country may not get global traction just because it's so localized. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad company. It just means it's really useful in one country and may not, and people from another country may not need to use it. But in the case of Malaysia, I do remember the founders wanting to build a global product from the very, very beginning, which I thought was really inspiring.
Yeah, I guess that could be also a fine line between being inspiring and ambitious to wanting to scale up immediately. Because if you don't build up traction in your own backyard, I'm not sure how quickly you can go viable in the longer term.
I totally agree. And so, yeah, I think building a great relevant product for your community that you're in is problem one or solution one. And if that solution can scale around the world, that's obviously that's the big unicorn that people are chasing.
Okay. And last question, Mike. Do you see anyone in particular being the next generation of FANGs?
Well, I think in Southeast Asia, when you look at companies like Gojek and Grab, they're huge already, but they're going to continue to grow. The number of services that they're doing are going to continue to expand. They're not just ride-sharing apps anymore. They're developing big platforms. And I think while maybe Gojek is not, or Grab is not a big name yet in America, I think they should be. I have no doubt that in a couple of years, it'll be a household name, and many more companies coming out of Asia will be on that radar as well.
Today, I was speaking to Michael Kim, who is the Asia-Pacific Partnership Manager for Google for Startups. This was The Breakfast Grill. I am Roshan Kanesan for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile for unlimited experiences. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.